Welcome to episode 8 of the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie.
I'm Lenny.
I'm Maria.
And Lenny and Maria are joining me as my next round of special guests as Sonya continues her exotic vacation in Colombia without me, but that's okay. this episode is called The Unstoppable Juggernaut. Before we begin, I just want to say make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever podcasts can be found. Rate us 5 stars. You can find us on Facebook at the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Just search it out there. Ask us any questions. We'll read them on the show. And you can follow me at Willie Simpson. Okay, The Unstoppable Juggernaut. Before we get into that, I just when I have some special guests here, I like to ask you guys your thoughts, memories, general impressions of the show, why you're on this podcast.
All right, so when you had posted the first time that you were doing this podcast, I like commented within 5 minutes of saying, this is the episode I want to be a guest star on, because this is the first instance that we meet Colossus. And growing up, first, I grew up with the show. This was the show that I loved. It's probably my more knowledgeable introduction to the X-Men. Like, I know the comics,
yeah.
But this is the real X-Men for me. And this was the first instance where you get Colossus, who, being a Russian immigrant coming into this country and seeing only the only depictions of Russians in the media are like Ivan Drago in Rocky IV, it was nice to see a character who's portrayed in a positive light.
Yes.
Well,
before we get into it, are there other Russian superheroes in the world of comic books?
Yeah, there are. Yeah. Silver Sable.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
There are others, but they're not...
Nova, is that... Am I wrong about that? Do you know about that character?
I don't know.
Okay,
I know Nova, but I don't believe there's a Russian version of him.
Right.
This one in particular, this is like the most well-known.
Yeah.
He's also, you know, one of the oldest members of the X-Men.
Yeah, he's a great X-Man.
Yeah.
And there's actually something so bittersweet about this episode that we'll talk about as we get into it. Very frustrating about Colossus. But yeah, I totally agree. Colossus is awesome. Maria, do you remember the show as a child?
A little bit.
Yeah.
My introduction to X-Men, like, where I was actually really super interested was probably the movies.
Yes.
But I was like a Power Rangers kid.
Okay, yeah.
So that was like my jam, my jelly.
That's the second Power Rangers reference. So I had my friend Matt on the last episode, and he was also talking about Power Rangers from this time, too. So everyone, Power Rangers is really on people's minds these days for some reason. Oh, the movie.
Yeah.
Mystery solved. This episode... it picks up from the cliffhanger of the previous episode, Slave Island, where the X-Men, they rescue Storm, Gambit, and Jubilee from Genosha, where they were enslaved with other mutants. And when they're flying home, they discover that the mansion is completely destroyed. And so so as they're flying in the sky, they're sort of completely shocked and freaked out. The first thing that sort of struck me, and this is just a minor point, is that Scott refers to the mansion as the school. And as we've been doing this podcast, I've been calling it a mansion. I don't think of it so much as a school in this show. It's not quite like the movies where... I feel like in the movies, it's more of a school than it is a base or a mansion.
Yeah, I don't think that they've really shown the mansion with all of the other characters that reside there. We really just see the core team more than anything else. You're not, you know, seeing them stroll through the grounds and seeing some
right.
random character pop out.
Yeah, and Jubilee's the only, like, teenager at this school. She's the only real student. The other X-Men seem pretty graduated. So it's just weird to me when Cyclops is like, oh no, the school. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. Because so far, actually, we've seen that when they're hanging out in the mansion, this is what we've seen. They're in the Danger Room, mm-hmm. which is...
Danger.
Right. That's like more, like, dangerous physical exercise. I guess they're learning, but it's like such advanced learning. It's like Navy SEAL training.
Yeah.
So that's not school-like. We see Gambit and Rogue use the swimming pool recreationally. We see Wolverine practicing karate in his room. Like, there's no... And we see the X-Men plan all their, like, complex military operations. No one's in a classroom.
Yeah, no. There's no classroom
right.
shown at all.
Right. Yeah, go on.
Maybe they'll rebuild it...
Yeah, they have to. When they rebuild it, they have to put in all the classrooms with the chalkboards and stuff.
I think Charles may have hired somebody to do some demolition, but since he left without telling them, you know, they think that, you know, something's going down.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know...
Well, let's pick up right from there. I mean, like, something, like, terrible has happened. They think the professor might be dead. They're all freaking out.
Well, they have terrible reactions to everything.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire series, this is something that you see. There's a lot of drama when somebody sees something out of the ordinary. Like, I think this was... when Wolverine disappears in a previous episode, yeah. They come into the room. Oh my God, where is he? He must have left permanently.
He must be gone for
I was just grabbing a sandwich. I was hungry. I was
in the
other
like
room.
A baby. Like, where are you? Peekaboo! Peekaboo! Yeah.
You're right. That's the X-Men journal attitude to everything. I brought that up in the Morlock episode that Jean sees Cyclops dead on the ground. And without even using her powers or anything, she just assumes he's dead.
Yep.
And it turns out it's a shapeshifter.
Yep.
And it's like if you just like thought about it for 2 seconds, you know. It's like, so yeah, their reactions are pretty over the top when it comes to anything. I mean, but in this case though, I mean the school is destroyed. It's pretty dramatic. So,
yes, it
I
is.
Mean, in this case,
this one warrants an appropriate reaction, which I don't know that they give too much. Actually, I think they kind of. You know, when you come to a destroyed school, you should have the reactions you had for previous events and not so much this one.
Right. And as we'll find out, the school gets destroyed quite a bit, so yep. They should get prepared for this eventuality.
Yep.
One thing I noticed, just to pick up something that we noticed in the first episode, I didn't think Storm would ever do this again, but we see her again transform into her outfit via lightning.
Yeah.
She, like, shoots, like, the ground, and the lightning rises up in her body, and she's in her silver Storm outfit. And that's... So I guess that's something she could do.
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
I can't explain that. I mean, there's a lot of costuming going on in this show that is...
In this episode, technically.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, As someone who has dressed up as Storm for Halloween at the age of... possibly 12 or 10, I can tell you the outfits are very, very interesting and impressive, and that is why...
Did you use electricity to put the outfit on?
I did. I mean, that's the only way
you
that you
a
can...
fork into an outlet.
That's how you get the white hair.
Right.
This is dyed. I have not been able to get my hair...
That's stupid. You know, she get in the latest movie, she gets the white hair from Apocalypse.
Yeah.
He touches her or something, and her hair turns white. But I like your explanation better, that it's just she's played with lightning so much that her hair has, like, become a shock of white.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. You know, I guess my... I'm almost, like, loath to bring this up, but my only explanation is that the costumes, they're made from something called unstable molecules... And this was established in the comics in, like, the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It was invented by Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four. I don't know what unstable molecules are or how that would allow Storm to, like, use electricity to change into it. But,
see, I never knew that. I knew the unstable molecules for the Fantastic Four.
Right.
I never knew that the X-Men...
It's in Giant Size X-Men number 1, which is the first appearance of Storm and Colossus.
Okay.
And they mention... He gives them their new costumes, and Professor X says they're made of unstable molecules that Reed Richards gave me. Beyond that, he doesn't really explain too much of what they... You know? But Storm does say something in the comic like, oh, it perfectly conforms to my skin in a way I can never imagine.
Like, it totally reveals so much more for our readers who happen to be prepubescent and pubescent boys.
Right. Yeah, it's like shrink wrap. You gotta vacuum seal that.
Yeah. I think you're right. Colossus, too, in the comic is also very impressive with the way the outfit fits him.
Yep.
But anyway... So, you know, it turns out we shouldn't have panicked. Professor X is okay. He leaves a very cryptic Wizard of Oz-style voicemail in the basement, which is undisturbed. And he basically says, I've gone on a journey. I can't tell you any details. I don't know when I'm coming back.
I can't tell you anything.
Right.
It's
Does
like,
everybody says this?
Yeah, he says, I can't tell you anything at this point, but this will probably change our lives.
Oh, right. That's even more cryptic.
It's like, okay, seriously.
It's for milk.
What are you a...
He went to go get milk.
What are you a professor of? Why can't you give us that information?
Okay, spoilers, he went to Scotland, right? To visit Moira Taggart on Muir Island. That's hard to say for some reason. And it's like, that must be a long plane ride. You can't give a longer message. Like, what else are you doing on this flight this whole time?
Yep.
All right, but he's
and they have cell phones, as is established,
right.
Which is established in this episode.
Yes.
Because first, when they're flying in on the Blackbird Inn, where Scott presses the speed dial button, and it says no answer on his screen.
Right.
And later on, when they're calling each other on cell phones, which, mind you, 1992.
Yeah, that was
not as common.
Yeah.
Well, especially not that small.
This is a theme that's come. Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that was some really impressive cell phone technology.
Yeah, this is a theme that's come up in the past few episodes. I've noticed is that the X-Men themselves, I think Professor X gives them like gold cards, and he's enormously wealthy.
Yeah.
And I think like as a result, they have cell phones. They've got convertibles, as we see. Rogue drives around in. They go to the mall to buy fancy clothes. I mean, they're really sort of living it up, you know, in the high life in the mansion. Which to me makes sense because it's like it's a real stressful job to be an X-Man.
So yeah. They're getting paid out their life insurance while they're still alive.
Because
they're going to die. They're going to die. I mean, as time goes on, that probability increases.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
When Scott's like 60 and he's battling a Sentinel, you know, he's going to get crushed.
But X-Men never really, they don't stay dead.
That's
so
true.
It might be a life insurance scam on there.
That's how he got so rich.
That's right.
He just takes out policies on them, kills them, and then when they get resurrected, they split the earnings.
Yeah,
there you go.
I mean, this is like the fourth episode I'm bringing this up on in a row, but my theory is that Professor X manipulates the stock market. That's how he's so wealthy. And to me, that just makes perfect sense.
Right? Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and he does it, and like he justifies it to himself as like moral because you know the cause is so much greater.
Yeah,
but it's like how else could he be so wealthy to afford like a supersonic jet and things of that nature, and you know cell phones for everybody in 1992? Can't imagine how much they cost. All right, so at this moment, we sort of get the first taste of the theme of this episode. Which kind of took me off guard. Lenny, you had to remind me, like, what was going on here.
This is a combination of teamwork. And
it makes the dream work.
And just team building. This is, like, basically the X-Men team building exercise. There was probably a trust fall happening off camera somewhere. But this was...
But Wolverine wasn't participating in
No,
that.
He was not.
Right,
he
yeah.
was, you know, Scott makes plenty of snide comments about Wolverine not participating and not acting as a team, and this was basically bringing Wolverine into the fold, making him understand that teamwork is how they accomplish things. And I think that Wolverine learns his lesson at the very end.
He does learn his lesson, but in the time being, he is having none of Cyclops' shit. He's like, fuck you, the professor might be in danger, I'm out of here. You're just going to slow me down.
I smelled a fart, so I'm going to go find the professor.
Yeah, we see more of Wolverine's amazing feet-smelling ability.
Jesus, I would hate to have that power.
You know what? All right, this is a good. You know, this didn't occur to me until right this moment. They go downtown. That's where the trail leads them to. Somewhere downtown. Cyclops sends Storm, Jubilee, and Rogue after Wolverine. Cyclops stays behind for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, really. Like, why he can't go as well?
To tend to the children.
All right.
Because
the children.
It's a school.
Yeah.
It's a school.
Right.
Somebody's got to do it.
Men are all dead. So he has to bury them.
And cash their life insurance policies.
they have jet fuel to buy. All right, but here's my question though: where are they going? Like, what city is this? Is this Westchester or is this New York City?
I have no clue.
It doesn't look like New York, unless it's like way up, like in the Bronx and like the fancy part of the Bronx. Like
it could
Riverdale.
Be White Plains.
Right. Oh, yeah, maybe it's White Plains.
You know, it's sparse enough, but also dense enough that you can kind of see it.
Right. It could be on Long Island, maybe, somewhere.
Possibly.
So, we're not really sure where they are. As a kid, though, I just assumed it was New York City, but looking at it now, that is not New York.
No, not at all.
And they do go to New York on occasion, too,
yeah.
So it's not like they don't go to the city. I mean, this is a show that takes place in, like, the United States, in
yep.
a real city, so... So, no, they're in some sort of, like, smaller, like, regional New York town. And then, all right, so then, you know, we're in this town, and then let's just, like, get right to it. So the star of this episode is Colossus, and
yep.
he makes
yeah.
his grand entrance. So any thoughts on Colossus entering our lives?
So this was, this is completely different from the comics where he's
yeah.
recruited and all
right.
that. They're
yeah.
basically looking for a guy with giant feet. They're looking. They come to
the ladies are looking for the car.
Exactly right. So they come to the mansion. They're going through no discernible wreckage because they just have giant rocks, giant whatever it is, and they see footprints.
Right.
And these footprints are giant. Yes. I mean, they're probably shoulder width of Cyclops.
Yeah.
And that's what they're looking for. So they come upon this guy who's not yet in his metallic form, so he's smaller.
Yeah.
He's actually smaller than the other guys who are working there.
Yeah.
And they go, that's the guy who destroyed our mansion.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder, what makes you think of that?
And even when he transforms into his metal form, it doesn't seem like his feet... It's not like they get like noticeably bigger. He gains like... I feel like he gains like 5% body mass size.
Well, he grows a foot. In the comics...
Oh, okay.
So when he turns into his organic metal form, he grows a foot.
That's pretty significant. Yeah.
Where he got unstable molecules for his pants, shirt, and shoes, I don't know, but I'm not going to nitpick it to the point of, the ribs make different sounds.
Right.
The Simpsons rap.
So he's at a construction site, and... this is a very, peculiar scene. So he's been hired by a construction site manager to demolish a building. I don't understand. I just don't understand, why... To assume that the construction site manager guy has already seen Colossus in action.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why would we hire him?
Yep.
And then it's like... Okay, you've seen him in action, but it's like, do you really need a solitary dude to, to do the action of a wrecking ball? Are you saving that much time and money? Are you doing him a favor, kind of thing?
And then if you are, why would you hire all the other guys with all the other equipment?
Yeah. And he sets it up in, the scenario where he's asking for trouble, too, because the other guys are there to work. And then he's like, hold on a sec, guys. Colossus, come out. You do, most of this work. You guys watch and, see that your jobs might be going away forever or something.
You guys clean.
Yeah. Right.
He's going to knock it down and you clean it up. That's basically it. You are now no longer construction workers. Mm-hmm. You just come here to clean.
Well, that must be a part of construction, though. I mean, it's you knock down a building and then there's, the cleanup.
Well, usually the demolition is controlled.
Oh,
meaning you take down a wall at a time and you take it to Carter. Well, yeah. Colossus.
So there's some safety violations going on here too.
OSHA's having a field day. But my question is, how did Colossus knock it down? Because all we see from there is just a burst of light, which I assume is him transforming into Colossus. But does he just do a spin after that?
He either does a fancy spin, or maybe he roots into the ground of this building and pulls out some kind of load bearing foundation. I don't know, but you're right. It comes down in a second.
Which, by the way, you got to give him credit if that's the case, because he understands structural stability and engineering well enough to know what to destroy so that the entire building comes down in one shot.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's worth the money, and he gets a big wad of cash. Is Colossus in the union, or is he being paid under the
table? He's a scab. They called him a scab.
Oh, that's right. He's a scab.
Yeah.
He's a mutant scab.
That's why they gave him the yellow money.
Yeah, he's handed some yellow money. I see some more yellow money in this episode. You were real concerned about the yellow money.
There was two scenes that they had the yellow money. The outdoor scene in the beginning when he gave Colossus the money, and then later on in the bank.
Yes.
Again, yellow money.
Yeah. But then it turns green later.
Yeah,
so
it's magic.
Yeah. Might just be an old Korean production anime or something.
No, they just needed to age the money.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's aged money. Yeah.
I love the progression of hate from the guys.
That's
at
what I was about to ask you.
Because it starts off with Super Ruski.
Yeah.
Their problem with him is that he's Russian.
Yes.
Yeah.
They do not know that he's a mutant yet, so they're going to...
Yeah, because they have stunned looks on their faces when he does his thing.
Yeah, and then they stop going, Super Ruski, they...
I didn't realize you were a mutant, too.
Yeah.
Fuck!
No, but they stop calling him a Ruski at all. So their hate of mutants trumps their hate of Russians.
Yes.
Which...
I guess is good for us.
No, not so much. Mutants don't exist. We're SOL.
It's actually, I think this is our second instance of white-on-white racism in this show, because Wolverine is quite, I don't know if racist is the word, he's quite culturally bigoted to Gambit, who he dismissively calls a Cajun.
Yeah.
Like a number of times. Like, I didn't know you have a soft spot for that Cajun. Or it's like, and calls him gumbo in a really derisive way. So, that, you know, the, they don't spare the sort of, you know, like different like white ethnic group racism in the show.
Although the ones with Gambit, I don't know if I'd go so far as... I think that's more of his origin, not so much his ethnicity or race, anything like that. It's more of, you got an accent of a French guy from the South.
Right.
I'm going to call you gumbo.
Yeah. But he, no, but he is Cajun.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, he is. So Wolverine's pushing a button.
Yeah.
That's my only point.
But does he find it offensive?
Gambit and Wolverine do not get along in these early episodes. They, there's moments where they're ready to get into a fight or... you know, kill each other, more or less.
Yeah, I think the Wolverine just doesn't like being called my love in French all the time. He is constantly throwing... I mean, Gambit is constantly throwing out mon amis.
Yes.
Which is great, it sounds nice, it's French, and then you know what he's actually saying, and you go, what? Why'd he call Wolverine my love?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's actually funny that Gambit was included on the show because he was really hot in the comics at that time, and Marvel Comics insisted that he be on the show. But as... it's like... it's like they had two, like, badass rogue, like, bad boys on the team, which you would think would, like, be, like, put the balance of the team out of whack, but I actually think it works. Like, it's like, somehow it doesn't detract from the whole dynamic of the show, that you've got two guys that have, like, serve a similar function, you know, in that respect.
Yeah, but it also allows them to jump between them, and so they're not overusing one or relying on one more than the
other.
Which I think that's what I was kind of alluding to with the X-Men movies, where they became a Wolverine and his happy friends rather than the X-Men.
Right, yeah, because it's like, in this show you get, like, lots of different, like, flavors and colors, and even if they overlap sometimes, they're different enough that it's interesting.
Yep.
And then, all right, so let's go back to Colossus. So, at this point, Wolverine and Jubilee jump him. Maria, you were really impressed by Jubilee's powers.
Yeah, pew, 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 pew.
Which actually succeeded in knocking him back a little bit.
Yeah.
She's like rainbow bright.
Sort of. Yeah.
Wolverine jumps him. He's manhandled pretty easily. And then Colossus grabs Jubilee and, like, takes a steel girder and wraps her in a tractor or something. And that was, he was being nice to her about it.
Yeah.
But still, that is, like, he put her in a tough spot there.
Yeah, if she's not getting out, she's probably going to need some help from somebody. Like, Jaws of Life coming out.
But you pointed out that she gets out. Like, I didn't notice it. That's a huge inconsistency with her power.
Yeah. Is like one moment she's just shooting some fireworks out of her hands and they're nice and whatever, and then at that moment she destroys metal.
Yeah,
and
she obliterates
steel.
Steel. Close range.
And at a later scene when she's actually with the Juggernaut, she causes the ground to like warp and it's incredible.
Yeah, so her powers are a little all over the map in this episode.
She's
a little stronger than we've seen her before.
Yeah.
And she'll be weaker, it we'll see in the future too. And then just one last nice little touch, the incidental music change. We got some like nice like Russian themes in the background, you know. It's like a really nice touch.
Yep. There was also our first potential fastball special.
Oh, that's right. I almost forgot.
When Wolverine does his one move, the first time he does it, he jumps onto Colossus's back, and Colossus grabs him, throws him, and Wolverine gives that great line of, guy's got a great arm.
Oh, yeah. You know what's great about the show? Because they could have been really lame and been like a lesser cartoon could have said, like, oh, hi, I'm Wolverine, I'm Colossus, this is the fastball special, it's when I pick you up and throw you. You know, it's like real stupid, but in this show, it's like very subtle. Like, you have to be a fan of the comics to know
exactly
what that
right.
is. And they make a subtle reference instead of just like making it this thing that is like easily recognizable. And that's like a great touch, actually. That's a real like beautiful point for comic book fans to take.
This is, I think, one of the benefits of the show is that it was able to take in young fans who were not at all familiar with the comics, or the ones that were, and bring them together into this show that, although isn't true to the original right. in every single respect, it is in so many others. That
it's got enough of the... It's got the spirit of yeah. the X-Men.
And for most people our age, I mean, this is the X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We do not know the entire canon of Marvel Comics when it comes to the X-Men, but we know this. We know yeah. the Phoenix Saga yeah. mostly from this, not yeah. from what actually happened in the comics.
And not to jump ahead, but the Phoenix Saga in the show is a fairly decent like representation of yep. the comics. So they're, you know, at times they're pretty faithful, and it's just, I just love the show, so I'm happy that you appreciate it too. And then, I mean, what happens next? And then the action sort of shifts more downtown. There's a bank robbery in progress, and this is where we meet the episode villain, Juggernaut.
Yeah.
So how would you guys describe Juggernaut? Juggernaut.
You can go ahead.
Oh, he looks like a penis.
I was not expecting you to say that.
Every single time I've ever seen him in yeah. any, you know, whether it's in the cartoons.
Like a penis too.
Yeah. But that's exactly what he looks like in the movies and the yeah. cartoon at any time.
It's great because he insults like a 10-year-old.
Yes.
Every insult that he throws at anybody yeah. is like a 10-year-old.
But that's kind of what the point of his character is, because he's got his rage is fueled by this hatred of Professor X, who is, I'm not sure if he's his stepbrother or half brother. I feel like it's actually changed. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just remembering it wrong. Let's just say they're stepbrothers.
Yeah.
So he hates his stepbrother, and it's all based on like some completely like petty like childhood rivalry that they had.
Yeah.
And it's actually one of the like stupider elements of the X-Men like universe, in my opinion, just that origin.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Juggernaut comes from, you know, like,
well, that's his motivation.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean they allude to this, that he's not a mutant. He right. is a he's magical.
He's got magic powers.
Yes. Yeah. He is powered by the Crystal of Sidorak.
Yes.
Which is an entity which existed before the universe. It's
yeah.
one of those cosmic entities.
Yeah.
And all of that is irrelevant here, because all they needed to establish was, one, there's a backstory with Juggernaut,
yeah.
that he knows who the X-Men are,
yeah.
and the X-Men know who he is.
Yeah.
We actually see
That's
it.
That's right, yeah, yeah. They know who he is. They've dealt with him yeah. before.
Although they're completely unfamiliar with his weaknesses.
Yeah, they
still kind of go and fight him one-on-one in the standard way. But in addition to having the backstory with him, him having a backstory with them, they also have the backstory. It's
yeah.
feeding into later on, so yes. we can explore that. And it's really nice. Yeah.
I agree. And so Juggernaut's robbing a bank. And then the police, though, are arresting Colossus, who... Colossus was claiming that, I was trying to stop the robber. Don't forget my accent.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, okay. And I'll take that. And... I like how the police are lugging Colossus in his metal form into the police car. Like, how could they lift this guy? He must weigh, like, a ton or something.
Also, why isn't he defending himself?
Right, yeah. I don't know. But so he's wrongly arrested, and that yeah. generates sort of the next, like, plot movement is Storm and Jubilee, I guess with input from Wolverine. Oh, yeah, Wolverine says it wasn't him. You know, this guy's being set up. He's at the wrong place, wrong time.
Because he smelled him.
Yeah. He got a really good whiff of him. So Storm and Jubilee decide to break Colossus out of jail. So that leads to a jailbreak. Thoughts on this jailbreak scene, guys?
I don't know if they're thinking, like, more than just what's happening at that moment. Like, when Rogue grabs the keys,
yeah.
and then the next moment just breaks... the door.
Right, yeah.
What's the point of the keys?
You're absolutely right.
I think she said it was the wrong keys.
Did
no?
she?
Didn't she?
Oh,
that
she?
Was for no, that was for the actual jail cell.
Oh.
That's right. No, you're absolutely right about that.
I was also confused on that.
Yeah.
So, you know what it is? They're just sort of flaunting. They've got they're just showing that they're so overpowered that they could just break into a jail in a million different ways. They're just whatever idea springs to their heads from yeah. one moment to the next.
That was also interesting, because that was like a holding cell for a like at a police precinct.
Right, but who is there?
And it was
Reese.
Yeah, and yeah. it was so armored.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Like, that was a bit much.
So it's like it's a holding cell for a police precinct in like let's just say Yonkers.
Yeah.
It's like some ridiculously like overbuilt prison, and for some reason Beast is serving his time. Actually, it might make sense that he's there, because he's a citizen of Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the jail that he's serving his sentence at. So I could actually buy that.
Well, he was just waiting for his time in court.
He's waiting for his time in court, but so. You would think he'd be in, like, a federal supermax.
Well, actually, they may be holding him temporarily before his court date. Like, if the next day is his court date, they might bring him down to here.
It's like that? It's like Rikers Island.
We're filling plot holes here, people.
Yes, you are. Plot holes that bounce from my brain for 25 years. So
and he speaks Russian.
Yeah, and Beast speaks Russian. Beast is quite the intellectual.
Well, I'm not surprised that he speaks Russian. He seems like the type of guy who's reading, you know, Russian literature in the original
and probably
language.
Russian, like, science, magazines and things of that nature, too.
His Russian accent is actually better than the Russian that Colossus speaks.
Oh, wow. Well, Colossus, he's like a peasant. He's not as...
That is true.
He's not as, like, as urbane as Beast might be.
Comrade.
So Rogue and Storm are happy to see Beast. They break Colossus out of prison, who's a little reluctant to leave because he's very moral.
Yes.
He also believes in due process. He doesn't want to just be a break out of jail. But, you know, I mean, come on, Colossus. You're an invincible super mutant as well. There's no point in staying in jail. No jail could hold you anyway. Yeah.
Why was he in there? Just for the conversation?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess you're right. Like, why did they... What was the point of putting Colossus in jail? It's probably just to illustrate, mutant, oppression in general, that they're easily blamed for things, and that it's very dangerous to be a mutant in this society. You know, it's like you could just end up in prison, just by being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
It actually does make sense with his character. He plays the martyr through the entirety of his... life in Marvel Comics.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
He is constantly putting himself in other people's... in danger for other people.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
he's super heroic.
Yeah.
He's one of the best characters, in my opinion.
How many times has he died now trying to save somebody else?
I know he's died... I mean, there's a few runs I've read where he's died. And then there's a great line when they break out where Rogue's like, oh dear, no back door. And then he knocks it down. Now there's a back door.
Well, he's in construction. He knows what he's doing. Yeah. He knows the building codes.
Yes.
He knew not to have the entire jail go down.
Yeah,
yes,
right. That's a nice size hole. And then the guards are chasing them and Storm, another great line where she says, Arctic wing... Arctic winds, make ice! I just love that she has to command Mother Nature verbally.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if that's how she, has to gets the powers to work specifically. Like, she has to call upon nature in this way. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, no, that's it. You need to somehow summon your intent, or at least... physically or vocally, you need to project that.
Yes.
Whether that's how you control your powers or whether it's just the way to kind of do it, that's just an option.
Yeah. So they're out of jail. The team is now ready to confront Juggernaut. And like you alluded to before, Wolverine knows Juggernaut or has dealt with him before, which is kind of interesting in a way.
Because he's the one who names him.
Yes. That's right.
Because Jubilee, Jubilee asks him, "Who is that?" And he says, "That's the Juggernaut."
Yeah. And Jubilee is afraid, as she should be, seeing this guy because Juggernaut is enormously powerful. He's one of the strongest beings in the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
And he's just stomping on cars like they're paper, just creating holes in the ground with his footprints. And Wolverine's pretty cavalier about inviting Jubilee to join this fight.
Come, teenager, let's go into Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, and he's
Mortal Kombat!
I don't know why Wolverine's so, willing to have Jubilee be in this, dangerous fight zone.
Yeah. I think Wolverine is cocky, as he should be.
Right.
But he's never one to shy away from danger, and if he thinks that he can defend Jubilee, he'll bring her in there.
Yeah, but the second he goes up against Juggernaut, Juggernaut grabs him by both his wrists with one, massive hand, holds him like a rag doll, flings him, and Wolverine's, dying in his grasp, and that's when he's concerned for Jubilee. He's like, Jubilee, don't. And he's, passing out, and Jubilee shoots Juggernaut.
Pew pew.
And so it's at that point maybe Wolverine realizes that he's a fucking asshole, shitty teacher.
Yeah.
That endangers the lives of teenagers.
That's when he shits himself because he didn't get a permission slip.
Yeah. More children will die today.
Money!
Yeah. So speaking of money, that was a cool scene where Wolverine slashes Juggernaut's money bags, and Juggernaut's so strong he doesn't even feel the weight of the money leave the bags.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that led me to a question that I've always had as a kid. If you're as strong as Juggernaut, how do you control that strength in, like, an everyday, day-to-day? Like, if you're trying to eat a banana or something, like, wouldn't things just, like, get, like, disintegrate in your hands, you know? Like, what if he has to, like, write something on paper? I mean, every pen would, you know.
Well, from what we see from his character, he doesn't seem like the intellectual type who's doing a lot of writing.
Yeah, I guess.
But maybe a lot of banana eating.
But even picking up that money with his hands, you'd think he would just crush it, you know, like, and disintegrate the paper.
Because when he stumbles around, you see him, like, lean on a building, and there's a hole in it now.
Yeah, and the whole foundation of the building gets upset.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Superman 4, A Quest for Peace. I don't know if you guys ever saw this movie.
Unfortunately.
There's a scene where Superman pushes the moon with his bare hands. And as a kid, I always wondered if he can push the moon with the force of his hands, an object that's, like, a million times larger than him, how does he hold a pencil in his hand? You know, the same hands that push a celestial object. So I think the same principle applies to Juggernaut. Like, I don't know how he gets through his normal life with such a power.
Well, I mean, his power is really just inertia. That's why he's the unstoppable Juggernaut.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once that's he like starts, he can't be stopped.
Yes.
So I guess when he starts writing, and to prevent himself from never stopping writing, he never starts.
Okay,
all right,
fine.
All right. What about banana eating? I'm still on this banana eating.
He has to,
eating.
Like, reach in with his mouth to, like...
But that's the thing. I found that the Juggernaut, I don't think he needs to eat.
Oh, right. He might not need to eat.
You find him at, like, the bottom of the ocean at one point, and he's alive without oxygen.
Yeah.
I think the magic that it sustains him.
Maybe he uses the magic... So, okay, I'm going to need
maybe he can modulate,
like,
the magic or something.
Yeah, like, now I'm going to have to eat this banana. I'm still on this banana.
Juggernaut eating a banana is a funny image. Let's just agree to that. And so then another thing you guys pointed out to me, actually we all kind of said at the same time, another theme of this episode is property damage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of property damage.
Quite a bit of it. And not just from the Juggernaut.
No.
There's a scene where Storm, like, creates a tornado, lifts a... Like, it's not a skyscraper, but it's at least, like, a 6 or 7-story building. Like, a modern office building. Lifts it off the ground and drops it on Juggernaut's head.
With no warning to the people inside.
I mean, are there people inside? You know, like...
We don't know.
And at this point, the police have given up. Like, they're just leaving the X-Men and the Juggernaut alone in this rubble zone of downtown, wherever.
And that's understandable. I mean, if you're like...
Yeah. It's too insane at this point.
If you're like the guy who's on shift and, you know, your commanding officer comes up and asks, why aren't you doing anything? You just point to the tank that someone just threw.
Right, yeah, they had tanks,
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was another...
Very well-armed local police.
Right. Well, yeah, this is...
It's like the South now.
Yeah, that's right. I was just about to say that. It was perceptive of modern-day policing equipment.
Because we need this tank.
Right. You never know when a human Juggernaut or Colossus will stride down your street.
It's true.
And that's... It's interesting. Jubilee says to Storm... you killed him.
Yeah.
And Storm says, nothing we know of can kill him. But the word kill is very unique for this show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they usually use the word destroy. So this is, like, early in the first season still, where it's not quite as censored. Because going forward, they will not use the words dead, kill, or killing, or dying, or death. Like, anything, like, too morbid.
So, I never caught that.
Yeah, if you keep picking up on the show, which you should, you'll discover that it's so annoying how often they use the word destroy when it just makes no sense. It's like too out of context.
I mean, not to switch into Spider-Man.
Yes.
But the episode with Deadpool, that was like one of the big jokes that he was like, I unalived him.
Which Spider-Man show were you? Is that like a newer cartoon?
No.
This was the one. This
it's
we're not talking about.
Spider-Man,
no, not the
right.
animated series.
Right.
This was, I forgot which one, but this was
it's a relatively recent one.
Yeah, probably anywhere between 2005 and 15.
I like that. That's funny though. You unalived him. That's a good way to get around that kind of censorship. All right, and then, so now they're fighting the Juggernaut. We see a scene where Rogue tries to absorb Juggernaut's energy, and that backfires horribly.
Yeah.
She gets, like, filled with white, like, magical electricity and goes insane and
Once again, white lightning coming out of her eyes. Well, yeah. Or just powers coming out of her eyes.
Yeah.
She now has, sibling issues with...
with Professor X. She gets... That's how we, like, learn more about Juggernaut's backstory.
Yeah.
In a weird way. Like, that's the point of that scene. But then that scene resolves itself where the electricity expels itself from Rogue's body into outer space in a massive, like, arc of terrible, like, destructive energy. That might mess up a few satellites, I guess. Now they're finally ready to get serious and stop him. Jean appears, and she's got a weird helmet on.
I think that's supposed to be the Cerebro helmet.
Oh, that's right. It's like a portable Cerebro.
Yeah, but this is the first time we see it.
Yeah.
No introduction.
Yeah, but she'll use it again in the future, too. Yeah, and she uses it to sort of, like, brainwash Juggernaut after they slice his helmet off, using teamwork.
Yeah.
Teamwork, it makes the dream work.
Yeah.
And then that's when Scott makes his snide comic, snide comment to Wolverine, like, about how he hasn't been really being a part of the team and not working together.
And Wolverine, like, reluctantly agrees there might be something to this teamwork garbage or something. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
And, and then we also see another instance of Jean passing out whenever she uses her powers.
Yeah, she is the most powerful, least powerful mutant ever.
Yeah, she's, like, it's not very feminist of Jean to constantly, like wilt away every time she uses her cool powers.
No, not at all.
No. So now the day is saved. Juggernaut is confused. He's brainwashed. He just wanders off. They just let him go on his merry way.
Yeah.
He's still banging into buildings, causing crop
left to wander for his own devices and all that. Yeah. And then
Colossus comes back to the mansion and he helps rebuild it. And he says, Wolverine offers him to join the team.
Yeah.
And this is what I alluded to in the early episode. This is bullshit. That he says no. I mean, why can't he join the team? It's a cartoon. Just draw him into the episodes. It doesn't matter.
Well, I don't think that they were looking to just say, we don't want him as part of the team, or draw him into the background.
Yeah.
I think they're setting up a longer or greater backstory to him, because there is the issue with his sister Liana.
Yes.
Says, I have to find her.
Yes, they mention that.
And he wants to see more of the United States.
Right, okay.
Which is not as, you know, serious an answer as the first one.
I mean, Colossus is so cool. I just don't understand. I mean, this happens a lot in the show. Okay, so this is the first episode where we meet, like, classic X-Men that, at the end of the episode, for whatever reason, decide not to join the team. And it's just, I don't, like, know why the show felt it had to stick with the main cast. If there's any kind of show where you could actually rotate in new cast members and, like, create some new, like, dynamics and, like, interesting, like, writing dynamics, it's this show.
Yeah.
Colossus, like, could be a new alternate. He doesn't have to be in every episode.
Yeah.
But he could just show up. It's like, oh, hey, Colossus, you're going to join us on this mission. And, like, you know, swap him out for someone else. And, like, I don't, like... I mean, that might be a bit too ambitious for a show like this, but I don't get it. It's just disappointing to me. And as a kid, I felt it very strongly.
I have a theory.
Yeah, what is
it? I think the artist did not want to draw the lines on on Colossus and his metal suit.
You know, by the way, I love Colossus's look. I love his, like, blue hair when he turns into a metal man. Like, I don't know. Like, does the hair become solid, too? It has to, right?
Yeah. He becomes organic metal. Through and through.
He gets, like, a flat top. It's, like, it's a really awesome power. And his power, too, you know, he could breathe in outer space and underwater as well. He doesn't need to breathe oxygen while he's in his metal form, which is kind of interesting.
He goes into the Superman regenerative coma at worst.
Yes, and
then,
that's right.
And then they use lasers to position his spine. When there was one comic, I think this was probably Excalibur.
Oh wow!
Where he broke his spine or something like that.
Yeah.
And they bring him to Moir Island, and Moira MacTaggert uses lasers.
Wait, did they break it in his metal form?
In his metal form.
Oh wow! Yeah. Oh my god! And I think that could break his metal form
somehow.
Yeah.
So, and they just reposition his spine with lasers.
Oh, that's cool.
So that he can then turn back into his human form.
I mean, that's why the show is awesome too, because the show if you like the X-Men from the show, you would be inclined to, like, you want to, like, learn the deeper stories, and that's why I got into the comics from
the show.
Same
here. Yeah.
It was like you want to know more of the backstories, because you knew they were hinting at stuff that was in the comic books.
Yep.
So, I like this one last line to sort of close out the episode where they're rebuilding the mansion and Wolverine says something so, like, just, I don't know, just ridiculous. He says, "I didn't know how much this dump meant to me until somebody wiped it out." He, like, kind of, like, hugs Jubilee as the sun's setting.
Welcome home to our dump.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, wow, you think it's a dump? You live in a mansion, dude.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, like, you're pretty lucky. Rent free. Yeah. Like, you get a credit card, as we assume.
Yeah. Where you can have your own Jeep at random.
Yeah.
Which
can right.
And multiple costume changes in this.
He changes his costume a lot of times in this episode.
Yeah.
Like,
he could afford it.
Right, yeah, he can go through multiple fancy outfits. He's got a whole subscription to L.L. Bean, probably, to replenish his flannel coats. So that's all I have. Do you guys have any more thoughts on this episode? Any things you want to talk about the X-Men? Anything at all?
Not really much more. It's okay. Really that kind of homecoming. I think the general themes of what we've talked about is that it was about teamwork.
Yeah.
It was about inclusion.
Yes.
And it was about, kind of a homecoming towards the end.
And we learn more about, bigotry again.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, Colossus is an immigrant and, he's, also a mutant, so he's got, like, a double layer of bigotry. And, like, that's, like, really, like, that's really good for kids to get that message. And it's not, like, they don't really hit people over the head with it. Like, we had to, like, pick it out, like, in a subtle way.
Yeah.
But it's there. Like, it definitely enters people's subconsciouses, especially little children when they watch the show.
At the same time, you still have that theme of Wolverine pushing people's buttons because he calls him Ivan.
Right. He does.
Yeah,
that's right.
He tries to get him to react.
Wolverine is not very culturally sensitive.
No, but you gotta give him credit where he recognizes when Colossus is trying to save people.
Yeah.
And
he's got
not
a good heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Wolverine teaches us that it's okay to be a little not PC as long as your intentions are good and you treat people with respect in the end.
Exactly.
So that's.
And my final thought is pew 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 pew.
Okay. Just a reminder: follow us on Facebook, X-Men Task Podcast. Seek us out there. Join the group. Ask us questions. Me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Subscribe to the podcast. Tell all your friends. Do you guys have anything? You would like to say before we go anything about yourselves or
not much, just keep on following the podcast because we know where you're going to be and
I can't thank you so much enough for being on this podcast. You guys were great. It was so much fun.
Thank you.
This was a really great episode, and I'd love to have you back anytime you want.
Absolutely.
Drop by anytime.
We're gonna have Colossus coming up again.
Yeah, you guys have to come here when Sonya's here. It'll be a blast.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Yes, and you have to be here for the next Colossus appearance.
Yeah. With
spoilers, he returns.
He's still alive, everyone. He's still alive, touring the country, looking for his sister.
His 50-state tour. Wait, so is his sister missing in the country? Is that what
I assume? So
so he's just gotta search every state until
it's possible. He's gonna go to every capital, just looking for her.
Yeah, The Adventures of Colossus would have been a good show.
That would have been a great spinoff.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
All
right. I also think this is probably one of the best non-comic media versions of him, because I as much as I love the Deadpool movie,
tell me about your thoughts of his portrayal in Deadpool. Too cartoony?
No, I think the he was animated to be more of like this no neck whatever it is, and it wasn't.
He's too much of a brute in that movie. Physically, his appearance wise.
Physically, yes, and he's also too much of a goody two shoes. Which I didn't really.
He
like.
He was a joke. It was a punchline.
Yeah,
and it wasn't like so much at his expense. It was like more for the purposes of the movie.
Yeah,
and in a way, it shortchanges the character. You know, he hasn't been done well in the movies.
No,
he's like a cameo in like X-Men 2. He's a real brief cameo in X-Men 1.
I think just the standing in the background.
Right, in the background, like drawing. That's
and then
the
they think gave him like two lines in Days of Future Past.
Yeah,
in
two,
the future version.
Right, two lines in Days of Future Past. He was really bad in X. He had more in X-Men 3, but that movie's terrible.
Yeah.
So it's like a real shame that he hasn't gotten his like big screen due just yet. But I mean, Deadpool, they got close, but like you said, it was like not like the real Colossus.
Yeah. And I think that's a disservice that they do to the older characters. I mean, as you mentioned, Yeah. Storm and Colossus,
yeah.
Giant Size X-Men number one,
yeah.
1975,
yeah.
You're 12 years after the X-Men premiered. You have these awesome characters who have been here for a really long time,
yeah.
And they're getting, you know, kind of third billing on some of these things. They're not even really... They're not being explored, and that's a shame.
You know,
I'm really glad this episode did it.
A little more bonus podcast here. I just had to tell you my master plan for how I would go forward with the X-Men movies. So I like that new cast they had with X-Men Apocalypse.
Yep.
Those young actors were great. But they were shortchanged as well in that movie. They didn't get enough time to really develop, but the actors are good. The girl who plays Storm's amazing. The Cyclops guy, Jean, all great. The next movie, call it Giant Size X-Men, which I think is a great title. That you might think that's weird, but I think that's a great title. Introduce Colossus again in that way. He could almost be like a prequel to the Deadpool one. Establish him there. You know, have it be about the team, and then the end of Giant Size X-Men 1 leads into the Phoenix Saga, which then you do for the next two movies and you get that right. So that is how I would like continue the X-Men series from here.
I like that, and I the only addition to that I would make is don't let Bryan Singer direct
it. Oh yeah, he's gotta go. We need some new like director that's
enough
got
is
like,
enough.
A new visual idea that knows how to direct action a little bit more coherently.
Yep.
And that like has just like a fresh take on it.
Yep.
Alright, that's all we got. Okay.
Thank you.
Alright guys, thank you so much, and good night, everybody.
Good night.